If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today we're finally getting into the first season of The Real Housewives of London. Now that we're well into it, we're 6 episodes in. Juliet from Ladies of London is officially there, and we have a good sense of what we're going to get from the show, and what we're getting, you guys, is great. I know that a lot of you don't watch it, but I know that a lot of you do watch it, because I've talked a lot about how you can watch it in America, even though it's only on HeyU, the international streamer. You can download ExpressVPN, you can sign up for HeyU, both of which cost money, warning, but again, this is a really great Housewives franchise, and so I'm glad to hear from people who are eager for me to talk about it on the podcast, and they have done the same thing to be able to watch it in America. But to help me get into it on the show today is Connor Bayen, who used to host this great podcast that I once guested on called Housewives and Me. He's now a radio broadcaster and DJ in Ireland, and what I didn't know about Connor when I booked him but that he's really in deep with HeyU, again, which is the international streamer that produces Real Housewives of London. And he's in so deep that he was actually their first ever subscriber. Like, what are the chances? He also DJs events for them, including FanFest last year, where Real Housewives of London was originally announced, and then also Brighton Pride for their HeyU float, which the cast of London was on. And he went to the premiere. So he has met all the cast members and he's very intimately familiar with the show. So, you know, I've known Connor for several years now. We've been internet friends. And I knew that he watched the show, but I had no idea that he had all these connections to HeyU and the cast. So we really get into the show kind of going housewife by housewife, sharing a bit about them, what we've seen from them and learned about them so far, our impressions about them, who they remind us of, their drama so far, and all that jazz. And don't worry, again, if you do not watch London, there's about 15 to 20 minutes of chat about the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, starting about 35 minutes into the chat, which, by the way, some people have asked me for time codes in the show notes for episodes, which I would do, but it's really difficult to make them accurate because I don't always know how many ads will actually be injected into an episode, which would throw off the time codes if I've written them out in the show notes. And for me as a podcast listener, the only thing that I think is worse than having no time codes is having wrong time codes. So I can't promise those for now. But yeah, about the last 15 to 20 minutes of this episode is about Salt Lake City. So if you don't want to hear us talk about The Real Housewives of London, if you aren't curious about it, if you aren't watching it and you don't want to hear us talk about it, fast forward to about that marker. But for those that do, enjoy my chat with Connor Bayen. Make sure to follow him at It's Connor Bayen on Instagram. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. We'll be back next week with The Real Housewives franchise power ranking.
I want to gab.
All right, today we're gabbing with Connor Bayan, a DJ and radio host who used to host a fantastic podcast called Housewives and Me. Connor's here to finally be able to chat about the Real Housewives of London in earnest, as well as some other currently airing franchises. Connor, thanks so much for being here. It's been too long. How are you?
I know. Thanks for having me. I mean, we talk on social media all the time, but we haven't done a long-winded deep dive chat in a long time. And I've been living that Housewives of London life. I've been watching it. I've been around these women. I have so much to say. I'm ready to go back to Paddington.
Yes, back to Paddington.
Back to Paddington.
So excited to hear that. So, okay, let's go back to the beginning when this was announced. When it was announced last year at FanFest, at Hey You FanFest, you know, when they revealed the cast, comparisons to Ladies of London, give me sort of like your top line initial reactions to some of these things before we got to the show itself airing.
Yeah, so, I mean, people probably don't know this. I am a DJ, and also my other claim to fame is I was the first ever Hey You subscriber about, I think, 8 or 9 years ago.
And how does that work? How do you become the first Hey You subscriber?
Well, so one of my radio jobs is I will do the entertainment news for a radio station I work for. So they asked me to cover shifts on that. And one day, I mean, years ago, I was trawling for stories and I saw a headline that said a new reality streaming service is launching for fans of The Real Housewives in Europe, blah, 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 blah. And I, at that point, was trying to watch these shows like... The way you guys are trying to watch Ladies London now, I was trying to watch these shows 10 years ago. Like, the back end of the internet, you're like, I'm getting viruses. What is it?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's fab. I read the article about it. I do a story on it in work. They say, sign up for more information on when we launch. I just put my email in, whatever. Like, a couple of months later, get an email saying, Hey You is now live. I'm like, well, let me go on and just see what shows I have. I click through. And it's not unlike, say, the way Peacock has the whole treasure trove of Bravo shows. It's like they had all this stuff that, like, I've been wanting to rewatch. Oh my God, they're putting up the episodes weekly. I don't have to, like, do this illegally. So I'm like, let me sign up, blah, blah, blah. Like, a year or two later, I'm working with Hey You on a project here in Ireland that they were planning on doing. And they sat with me and were like, oh, you know, you are a first ever subscriber. I was like, I've heard this, but, like, surely you're just saying that. They're like, no, the day we launched, we sat there and waited. And the first name that came up was yours. I was like, that's
amazing.
Actually sick. It's actually sick. It's sick.
I love it. Like, that dedication.
Great. Amazing. But it means I've got this kind of nice working relationship with them where I do like events and stuff for them. And they asked me to DJ at FanFest last year. So like I knew about FanFest before they'd announced it. Like I had a rough idea what was going on. So I thought I knew the layout of the day because I was DJing between panels and stuff. So I kind of was like, okay, I need to be here and here at these times. But they kept that Real Housewives of London announcement 100% under wraps. Like I didn't hear a word about that. And I was, not to sound braggy, but I was around everyone all day. I was backstage. I didn't hear a single person talk about it. So they obviously knew that it was like kind of a gag. So when they announced it, I was just so surprised because I was like, oh my, like I had not expected that at all. And they were at pains that day in a good way to like, it's a Hey You original. We're making it ourselves. It's their first ever in-house production. I was like, oh, that's so exciting because this will stand against all the other shows and has a built-in audience. So I was really excited when I heard that part of the news. And then obviously as worried about filming got out and we started to see the cast and even just the imagery and the trailer and stuff, I thought, oh, this has a visual identity and it's got its own vibe. And
yes,
they've done a great job of, I think, giving something that has the feel of the American show, even just with the visuals and the design, while still also like it's using these very like fun images and things we know of London. Like, you know, it plays off almost tourist imagery. So all the buzz leading up to it was amazing. Like I was like, okay, this is exciting. Like, because it's like, we don't get that many new shows. I know Rhode Island's coming soon and stuff, but like really a new Real Housewives show.
A new franchise is rare. Every couple of years, right? Exactly. And when they revealed the cast, when you found out who was on the show, did it feel like legitimate enough? How many of these women had you heard about before?
Yeah.
I don't really have a good, like for example, Amanda, and we'll go through the cast, but like she is presented as like this tabloid fixture and I have no idea if that's like super accurate or so. Did you know about most of these women beforehand?
It's so funny because like Ireland and the UK are separate, but in Ireland we get so much British pop culture just because we're so near the UK. So you do get a sense of like, what are the big British shows that air here as well? Or who are the kind of, you'd know the same pop stars and celebs stuff.
Totally.
I didn't really know most of them. I knew Juliet Angus because I'd watched every frame of Ladies in London, knew her. Amanda, I was like, maybe I've seen a headline about her, but I think her fame is kind of niche. But the Daily Mail will fixate on these kind of wealthy, glamorous gals, particularly ones that probably, I'm sure, every so often send a little tip in. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Karen, I had heard that Karen was on Jersey and Cheshire, but I'd never watched Jersey and Cheshire. So They were the only ones. Who else? Like, in terms of not everyone else, not really. But what was interesting to me was before they said anything with the cast, I was curious, like, what mix of people they would be. Like, the way Ladies of London was very clever to have US and UK and almost compare and contrast them. I was kind of like, what kind of set in London will this be? Because I know that there's very wealthy glam gals in London who would never go near a TV show, much like with, say, New York. They're not going to get certain socialites because they'd never do a TV
society
show.
Society people, exactly.
So once they announced the cast, I was like, oh, I wonder what the relationships are and what kind of parts of this London scene they're in, because it's like any city with like a wealthy slab of people. Someone would never go near a show like that.
Right. But I feel like, again, from my American perspective, once we're getting into the show, I'm like, these women feel like connected enough. It feels like enough real money is there. They're living the lifestyle. Some of them are going to like royal family adjacent events. So like, even if they aren't sort of
royal family adjacent is an amazing turn of phrase.
But you know what I'm saying? Like they're not, maybe they're not like the cream of the crop if you're like somebody who lives in London and know what's going on. But I think that that doesn't really matter. I think like this is being presented to the world. It feels like it's representative of London, maybe in like a cliche, as you said, sort of tourist imagery way, but
yeah,
like it works
but that
for me.
Works.
Yeah,
it works
exactly.
For me too. And like, I often think, because I watch all these shows set in the States in places I've never been in America, and within a couple of episodes, I'm like, okay, I get a sense of what this part of the world is like for these people. I'm not necessarily going, oh, this is what Utah's like for everybody. This is what Atlanta's like for everybody. But I get a sense of, for these women, they orbit each other in the kind of the same, like the way on original New York, like they all, the way Harry Dubin was a figure for all of them, like that was part of, oh, they do orbit the same bars and kind of social circles. And that's what's been fun about London for me. It has felt like they've cast it really well. And they're, as you say, existing relationships. And also they've been open on the show. Like, I'm just getting to know Blah properly because I've only known her from this and this. And that's, the first episode starts really hot with the Panthea Juliet Mayhew stuff. Like, there's obviously something brewing there. And you can tell that Juliet is genuinely like, what's actually going on here?
Yeah, totally. All right, so let's get into the women. I kind of, I think we're six episodes in, I want to say, at this point. And so I think the best way, because I have not talked about it on the podcast yet, we're just going to go through each of the women and kind of talk about them and maybe what they've been involved in so far this season. And also, something that I've been thinking about as I've been watching Connor is like, do they remind me of any other existing housewives?
Because 100%.
So if anybody comes to mind for you, especially for people who maybe are listening to this and have not, you know, signed up for ExpressVPN and then
or
are
waiting
account,
for that US drop.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Okay, we're going to start with Amanda Cronin, who, you know, she's presented this tabloid fixture. She reportedly got one of the biggest divorce settlements in the history of the UK, which is up for debate because she won't give a number to it. She has a skincare brand, but then she also has like a treatment room hidden behind a secret door in her home, which is very, it's a nice house in London, but it's like, it's very kind of over-decorated. She's friends with Dorinda. She sort of presents as very prim and proper, but she also has already also feuded with multiple people in this cast. And when Juliet Angus joined in episode 5, she was particularly activated and kind of showed a different side to herself. Let's touch down on Amanda. What are your thoughts on her so far?
I find her so fascinating. And some people have compared her a little bit to Lisa Vanderpump.
Yeah.
But she does have that kind of, she has a slightly removed from reality quality that I love. Like, there's a point where they go on, not the cast trip, but a cast trip where Karen, who we'll obviously get to in a minute, speaks about, posted a cryptic Instagram story after she supposedly made up the cast. We're like, what could this mean? And Amanda's like, I just took it as a positive. I see everything as a positive, babe. I thought it was a good thing. Like, she's so in her own realm. Like, and the stuff she comes out with, like, you know, when she's beefing with Panthea, she says, I'm good at everything, so just accept it. Like, she's just got this truly, like, blonde bombshell, I do what I want. And she's quite witty and charming. She does have a sweetness to her. But I have also been a little taken aback at how full on she's been in some of the arguments. But then I suppose I do appreciate that they don't hold back. You know, there's a steeliness to her that I think is really interesting. And she's also quite funny and charming, and she is glamorous. I mean, when I met her in person, I was like, oh my God, you are absolutely, she's like tall and leggy and blonde. And she's like a cartoon character in the best possible way, you know?
Yeah. I feel like people would be obsessed with her in America.
I would love her on an Ultimate Girls trip with like Giselle. Can you imagine?
Oh my God, no. No, but you're right. She has this, she does have this sort of steely quality, and she does have some Lisa Vanderpump elements, but she's definitely more aloof than that, or at least she like presents as more aloof than that, I would say. Like, I think that she knows what's going on, but I think that like up until Juliet joined the show, she kind of wanted arm's length with some of the drama. And then once Juliet came in, who had clearly seen sort of like, I think Juliet had seen Amanda at maybe like her lowest point. Like she was going through her divorce. She was waiting on the settlement. It was locked down. She was living in like a rental apartment that has been shaded. But Juliet was like, you were living in a basement apartment. And Amanda goes, it was a two floor duplex, babe. Like two floor flat or whatever it was.
Oh my God.
She's showing a different side to herself in these past two episodes that is showing you that like she's way more, she can get activated. Basically,
I mean, I'd loved at the premiere in London, they aired the episode for us, which is really fun to watch for an audience. Before that, they did a Q&A. And whatever way they'd done the seating, like I think Amanda was either the first person beside the host or the second person, but she was near kind of one end of this line, not a million miles from her at a reunion. People sit in different spots. And Juliet Angus was way at the other end. I don't know if that was intentional. It may have been. No, I don't know.
Definitely.
But they were being asked to, like, I don't know, describe themselves or what was the experience like. And Amanda at me, she's like, you know, I'm a very positive person and blah. And she's kind of talking like this. And without missing a beat, Juliet Angus's reaction was just like, she just looked so annoyed. And the crowd immediately lost it. We were like, A, there's clearly real tension here, but B, Amanda is so in her own little world. Like, she's like, I'm all about, like, I'm paraphrasing. She was like, I'm all about love and blah, blah, blah. It was just so funny. I was like, I'm all in on this chick. Like, take me on board.
It's so classic Housewives presenting as that when there's so much more of the story. You know?
Now I'm like, not by episode six, you weren't. I saw what you said in the castle.
Right. Okay. So Amanda, and there's also an after show already for this first season of London, which is great. And Amanda is paired with Karen Lodrick Peace, who you said she was on Jersey. She was also on another Housewives.
Cheshire.
She's now been on three Housewives franchises.
I know.
Which has to be a record.
Yeah.
She has this larger than life presence. And I think that she's she's so watchable. She's kind of given us a lot of different levels to her, like, you know, her sister just passed away during filming, so we're seeing a more like kind of emotional side to her. You know, she lives this fabulous life. She's originally from Jamaica. She is definitely confrontational and she will defend herself. I really like what Karen brings to the show. I think it's a different side to the cast.
I like her dynamic with her daughters, because they're both kind of, well, one of them is in their teens and one's, I think, is either like 18, 19 or early 20s, but like her kids are a little bit older, and I think she's got that kind of like big sister vibe with her kids, which is fun to watch. You get the impression that she is loaded, because her husband's job in football in the UK is like, he's a power player. So I was actually, when they said his job and his details, I'm like, I think I've actually heard him, and I know nothing about sports. So I was like, he must be a big deal. And also, like, I like her background and her story. I mean, it's heartbreaking here to talk about a sister.
Yeah.
And I actually am surprised how much she was filming not long after. I got the vibe it was keeping her mind off it, but like, that's just unimaginable. I also like, you know, in certain episodes, she's like taking her kids to like the parts of London she hung out in as a kid. And there's a big like Caribbean community in London and in the UK. So it's a fun way of showing, like, because actually all of them have touched on this in the show. Like, London is a very diverse city, and it has always been seen as a melting pot. And there's so many different kind of walks of life or different places and things to eat and try out and hang out and places to hang out in London. And in a strange way, Karen is a lovely ambassador for that. Even though, like, there has been this implication that, like, she actually lives in Jersey or whatever. I'm like, listen, I've watched enough of these shows where they've moved in to film something. I don't care.
Can you explain what that means? Is Jersey, how far away from London is that?
I mean, that's like a basically a little island down, like, the end of the UK. So, like, it is just quite removed from.
Got it.
I think the implication is maybe, like, because she obviously was in Jersey at some point. I just haven't watched that show, so I don't know how much. I think she was on both seasons of it. Like, I don't know if she moved down to Jersey to do the show and then wasn't popular there, or as in, that's what some of the women are saying, right? That there's been issues with other women and her in Jersey, or just when you're that wealthy, you're not in one place all the time.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, she lists off her many properties of the first episode, or like, they live in probably three or four places. Who knows?
And also at Juliet's lunch, Pantheo was saying that she actually lives in Birmingham, which I guess she doesn't have a house there as well. But you're right. And she is renovating a house in London. So, like, I just think there's a lot of money there. She has many properties. She lives in different places. And, you know, again, she's also somebody who, you know, she is barred with a lot of them. Her and Panthea keep going at it. Panthea called her not a lady. She said that you became a lady. And that was sort of like kind of a really loaded, comment from Panthea.
Yeah, it was mean.
Yeah, it was really mean. But you mentioned the Instagram story thing. So basically, Karen opened up about her childhood and how, you know, when she was growing up in Jamaica, her mom just like couldn't look after her. And so she sent her to live with her father. And there was sort of like this abandonment thing that Karen has kind of carried with her throughout her life. Mm-hmm. And she opens up to all the women about this. But then at the same sort of dinner, she's sort of dangling this carrot about, will people talk shit basically about, was it about Amanda that they were talking about?
Her and Panty had made up, and then she basically was implying the Instagram story, I know the Panty is full of shit and I did this to play Seder, but like, don't get comfortable. And I'm like, obviously Amanda didn't read anything into it. The other girls are like, this is weird.
That's what
I mean, Karen is funny. There's like a shy, kind of like very reserved quality, but then when she gets engaged and passionate, she can just kind of really, not turn it on is the wrong phrase. It implies that it's not real, but it bubbles up for her. And also on a shallow note, she is just absolutely stunning. Like even, I remember at the premiere, I was like speaking to her briefly, or I think I said hello again or something. And I actually, my jaw just dropped. I was like, oh my God, you're like a statue of a person, like just exquisite. And I know that's shallow, but like sometimes when the women on these shows are really gorgeous, you'll be just watching a random frame and going, oh my God, like she's beautiful. She's stunning.
Sometimes they really pop on TV and sometimes that doesn't really carry over into person. I think Karen is definitely probably one of those people. I've not met any of these women.
Gorgeous.
Or Juliet.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
We heard you. 9 years of Bring Back the Snack Wrap, and you've won. But maybe you should have asked for more. Say hello to the Hot Honey Snack Wrap. Now you've really won. Go to McDonald's and get it while you can.
So she has, again, been sparring with Panthea. And Panthea is... talk about made for housewives. Panthea is made for this. She is a stay-at-home mom with a lot of money. She is, again... she's butted heads with multiple women on this cast already, Juliet, Amanda, Karen. And, you know, I think that some people maybe would be turned off by how sort of like willing to spar she is. But I really appreciate how quickly Panthea was to get things activated at some of these different group events early on. It felt very natural to her. And I was kind of impressed by that.
Oh, yeah. I think Panthea is, her whole thing is, I don't like liars. I'm real. And like, I just tell like it is. And I've got real true friends in my corner. So even if she is egging things up for the show, there's a kind of like, if she has her bee in her bonnet about something, you can tell she's just going to say it. And like, even, I think it was either this week or the week before, they were talking about the castle that Juliet Mayhew is like a co-owner in or has a stake in and bringing the women over. And Pandy is saying in her interviews, oh, off camera, she said this. And now she's annoyed that, you know, it's on camera, but there it is. Like, she's already kind of, she doesn't, in a strange way, even though she feels like she's doing it for the show, I think she cares the least about the show. She, in a sense of, she'll say something whether she wants to or not. She's very Ramona in that regard.
Yeah, I see that.
I often watch her and go, this is like Ramona in the early days. Her accent weirdly reminds me of Jerry Halliwell in her peak, like Ginger Spice days. That's probably just the voice.
Yes.
But like, there's just something about Panty. And like, I remember even, so I DJed at Brighton Pride for PayU this year, and they had four of the six women on the float with them. So I met those four that day and then met them again at the launch a couple weeks later. And I think I tagged Panty in something after the launch and she liked it and then sent like a voice note where she was like, I'm still in bed having a cup of tea. I don't have a job, but this is a lot of work. And I was just like, why are you sending me voice notes? Like I sent a reply. I was like, so good
You're
to see
indeed.
You. But I was just laughing. But someone else said, oh, she sent me a voice note. I was like, she reminds Lisa Barlow that she loves to just be like in the DMs gossiping. I was like, this chick, like you really do feel like she, I mean, honestly, even when we were on that float, like we had a mic that one of the drag queens was emceeing with. And then the women would take the mic and go, oh my God, make some noise. Panty had the mic and we were like, you and someone else needs the mic now. And she's on the mic going, guys, subscribe to the Housewives in London on HeyU. It's only £5 a month. Come on. Like, just talking. We were like, we're on a bus in like the biggest pride parade in the UK. Like, give someone else the mic. Like, she's a yapper. Like, she cannot stop talking.
And she's also somebody who, like, you know, she goes, her and Karen have had this sort of back and forth of like, which
royal adjacent or royal events they get invited to. And she goes to the garden party. King Charles and Camilla are walking down sort of like this path that's lined with people who are watching them. And instead of like, you know, just waving or reaching out to shake their hands, she is selfie videoing the whole time. And then they're right behind her. And she's like, smile, smile. It's just, she has no... She's somebody who doesn't get embarrassed. You know what I mean? She's just sort of like going to do it.
Yeah. I don't know if you have this phrase in the States. I think they say it in the UK as well. But here we would say about someone like that, they have a brass neck, which is to say they will have no shame, no remorse. Yeah, no they'll shame. Do anything. Like brazen is another word we would use. Like she is very that. And actually, it's funny too, because obviously they never would have let cameras for that show into an event like that. So everyone, they're very stiff upper lip, British monarchy stuff, waving the flags. And she, because as an Irish person, a lot of the monarchy talk on the show makes my eyes roll back in the back of my head a little bit. I'm like, it's not really for me. So when I see her do that, I laugh because I'm like, you know what? I bet they hated that you did that.
Totally.
And the name dropping.
And I feel like every Housewives franchise needs somebody like that. But I think especially a franchise that's in London where the culture is stiff upper lip, you know, you do things as they're done. So for her to sort of penetrate that, and to sort of show the other women that you can do that. And I also think that none of them will ever be as much that way as she is. So like they know that it sort of opens up some space for the other women, I think, to like be a little bit more animated and active that way.
Also, like we have to give a shout out to her mom, who is so famous.
And she's iconic.
Who could probably be a cast member if she wanted. I do enjoy, it's funny because Panty also has had some more serious stuff. She spoke about like her family happened to flee Iran years ago, and then even she went to see a doctor about like symptoms around menopause and seeing, you see that they've managed to show you that she is kind of likable and human as well. Like she isn't just kind of a yapper who's starting fights. There is something kind of charming about her. And that's where the casting for the show has been good. None of them feel like one note or kind of obvious, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I would watch a show that was about Panthea's household life, basically. Like there's a lot going on there.
And she will love that you said that.
But I also feel like for another season, they could lean into somebody like her mom.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as we're seeing on Salt Lake, and we'll talk about that, like we're seeing sometimes like a kind of complicated mother figure can be such a compelling, you know, presence on the Housewives show. And so I think that for them to lean into her mom could be interesting for another season.
Yes, friend of.
Next up is Nessie Welshinger. She is basically the peacekeeper of the group. She was formerly in finance, made a bunch of money. Now she has a cake business. They own an estate in the Cotswolds, which is where the first cast trip was. Again, another necessary presence for the group. And I don't think that she's like a pushover by any means, but she kind of teeters that line, maybe.
She is very Cynthia Bailey coded to me. She's like the nice one, the normal one. She's great at talking to everybody. She still has a bit of a backbone. You don't feel like she's a pushover. Sure. I actually find her really charismatic. And I'm sorry to keep bringing up my interaction with them because it sounds name-dropping.
No, it's good. It adds color to it.
I remember the day we did the thing in Brighton. I thought they were all really fun. And I was immediately like, oh, I get why you're all going to be doing the show. But I was really struck. Nessie was the only one you felt like you could have a conversation with. Like, the other women, I think, were just like, oh my God, we're at this and it's crazy. Whereas you can tell that she's interested in people. And I was like, tell me what. Like, I was like, oh, the way you're listening to people and interacting makes you think you're great for a show like this because you actually want to hear everyone's side of the story and you don't want it to all just be chaos. And there's something very charismatic about her. At the launch, I remember they had these gorgeous waiters walking around and my friend was like, oh, they're all actors and models. I have very Vanderpump Rules is this. They're all actors and models. They're from my friend's agency. Like she hires like the most gorgeous people to like be, you know, at the service team at these events. And I was like, yeah, they're all stunning. And I'm like, one or two of them are gay and really excited to be at a Real Housewives launch. So one of them like insisted on getting a photo with Nessie, and Nessie was like, no problem, but beckoned all the hot waiters over for a photo and took this photo with all like 10 of them in the middle. And she was like, I was like, you are like, it's always the quiet ones, you know, because they kind of joked about that on the show, her like racy side. I was like, there's something about her. Like, I'd say she can just charm people. And you see that even the way she's able to deal with the conflict, like it's natural. Sure. I don't feel like sometimes you get people go on these shows and they're like, oh, I don't want to get into any fights. And you're like, boring, where she's like, hang on. This has gone too far. But, you know, like I liked her human kind of willingness to listen to her human side and her kind of warmth. Like, I really like her. Like, I really like her. Like, I like all of them, but her, I'm like, oh, I like you. That's my first thought when I think of her.
And I think they respect her, which is important. You know what I mean? So they'll listen to her. And yeah, I think that she's a good presence. And I think one of the most iconic images so far of the season is her playing piano. She's like this incredible pianist. And she's waiting for the women to come for this dinner at the Cotswolds at her house because they're all staying at a hotel because they're redoing the rooms. And they're arguing on the bus right outside the window where she's playing the piano like really dramatically. And she's in this red dress. And it's just, that to me is one of the most iconic images so far of the season. And I just had to point that out because she's had her moments. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, that house she's redoing is gorgeous. And like,
There are some moments also, especially when she kind of is talking about her home life and the cakes and it kind of reminds me of Meghan sometimes, I have to say, but that's probably controversial.
Meghan Markle?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you said Meghan, I was like, does he mean someone who was on one of the shows? I was like, was Meghan Markle?
No, I mean Meghan Markle, Meghan. Like, yeah, who I think has some of those same actually personality qualities as Nessie does.
Yeah.
And she also takes a lot of pride in like being a homemaker and stuff like that. So there's something about her that she'll be talking in a confession and I'm like,
That's interesting. That actually does make sense. Yeah.
Chronic migraine is 15 or more headache days a month, each lasting 4 hours or more.
Botox, onabotulinum toxin A, prevents headaches in adults with chronic migraine before they start. It's not for those with 14 or fewer headache days a month. It prevents, on average, 8 to 9 headache days a month versus 6 to 7 for placebo.
Prescription Botox is injected by your doctor. Effects of Botox may spread hours to weeks after injection, causing serious symptoms. Alert your doctor right away as difficulty swallowing, speaking, breathing, eye problems, or muscle weakness can be signs of a life-threatening condition. Patients with these conditions before injection are at highest risk. Side effects may include allergic reactions, neck and injection site pain, fatigue, and headache. Allergic reactions can include rash, welts, asthma symptoms, and dizziness. Don't receive Botox if there's a skin infection. Tell your doctor your medical history, muscle or nerve conditions, including ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, myasthenia gravis or Lambert-Eaton syndrome, and medications, including botulinum toxins, as these may increase the risk of serious side effects.
Why wait? Ask your doctor, visit BotoxChronicMigraine.com or call 1-800-44-BOTOX to learn more.
All right, we're ending with the two Juliettes. Juliet Mayhew, who is Australian. She's friends with Caroline Stanberry. So we've seen Caroline a couple times this season because of her. She's an actress. She got into one of the first feuds of the season with Panthea. She is a stakeholder in this castle that they're traveling to right now on the second cast trip. I feel like I can't really... She's probably the one that I can't fully touch down on in like a distinct like personality way. Like, she kind of feels a little bit more interchangeable than the other women, but I don't dislike her. I'm still sort of getting the sort of concept of who she is.
I really like her because I find her quite kind of glam and fab. I think of the in terms of fashion and in the they've all had really fun interview looks where she's done some very like wink wink kind of slightly camp but very fashion kind of moments, which I appreciate. I like that she's a bit like Nessie and that she's a bit of a peacekeeper, but also you can tell if something bothers her, she's kind of a bit of a like a dog with a bone about it, which I like. Like, you know, there's a moment where Amanda is unhappy with how the picnic has gone with Juliet Angus's arrival, and Juliet Mayhew was really annoyed at the idea that she didn't host a good event because the event planning or organizing side of her business seems to be a big, like, I think she works for a lot of private clients. And I just love her kind of origin story of like, she grew up in like rural Australia and then like in this posh boarding school and then bounces around the world. I remember she wasn't at the Brighton thing, so I met her at the launch and she had sent me a message being like, I'm sorry I wasn't there, it looked really fun, blah, blah, blah. And so it's nice to meet you properly. And she actually is friends with two of the women from The Real Housewives of Sydney, one of whom, Nicole, on the most recent season, couldn't attend the reunion in Sydney. So she filmed her reunion stuff remotely in a hotel in London and Juliet Mayhew was there. So I was like, oh my God, I'm a big fan of Sydney. I know you're friends with Chrissy and Nicole. She goes, they're very dear friends, but I'm very close to Dorinda. She brought that up unprompted. I was like, I love that about you. I was like, I knew Dorinda was in the season, but I didn't know you knew her as well. Like, Dorinda knows all of these women. They could fly Dorinda in tomorrow. She goes, yeah, I loved Dorinda's very close to me. I was like, okay, cool.
That's so funny. And so funny that both her and Amanda are so close to her. Like, it's like, and they're probably competitive over it, which would be a great little storyline.
That's what I thought maybe she was, because obviously I've not seen this season. I've seen one episode at this point. I'm like, cool, okay. But there's something very, I do think, and also of all of them, she seems very connected to all these different elements of society, yeah. all these different parts of like this scene in London that they're all kind of in. And even just her background of, oh, I was a singer and I was an actress. Oh, and I do this events thing. And I've mm-hmm. lived in all these different places. I think she's a very interesting character. She's probably not, as you say, broad strokes, this is who she is, excuse me, as some of the other girls, but I just find her really interesting. And I also get the vibe when it comes to the reunion and a possible second season, I have no idea if they'll do another. I hope they do. I could see her unfurling even more. Or I think she's definitely a very interesting character. There's something
there.
There
are layers there.
I also,
absolutely.
I love an Aussie. I loved Housewives of Melbourne. Sydney was a little hit and miss sometimes. The two Aussie Housewives shows are some of my favorites ever. So I just love when we get an Aussie in the mix. I find her very charming. There's something about her.
Yeah, no, I like her. I'm still figuring her out in sort of a bigger picture way.
Yeah.
All right, last up is Juliet Angus, who mm-hmm. joined just two episodes ago. I'm guessing that was contract negotiations that were happening. We know her from Ladies of London. She was one of the quintessential Americans on those three seasons of that show. She presents herself as like an OG influencer. I think having an American on this show kind of does scratch that itch that Ladies of London had, because this sort of Americans versus Brits thing was so ingrained into that show. And she comes in guns a-blazing. Her and Amanda have this huge blowout fight at Juliet's lunch. She's very argumentative. She's going to stand up for herself. She's very American, you know, in sort of a stereotypical way.
She's very American. I'm glad you said that, not me.
But she is. She brings that energy to the cast. And I think it's kind of helped to, they were doing great before, but it's taken it to another level in terms of some of the arguments and some of the drama.
Yeah. And it's also, I do think, obviously not all Americans are the same, but you do notice when you watch American reality shows versus other countries, I think a certain kind of American personality lends itself really well to reality TV. And so we obviously know that about Juliet if we watched her on the other show, but I think in this dynamic, her just kind of forthright side is useful for these women to maybe stay kind of like to stay kind of alert and go, okay, I have to kind of muck in here. And obviously the way she has kind of lit a fire inside of Amanda Carlin is so interesting mm-hmm. because it's obvious there is a lot of history there. And so you can't manufacture that kind of resentment or back and forth. Like, it's really fascinating. And also, I actually have enjoyed seeing her home life and like having now started following her online because of the show. I'm like, you know what? She is, as fashion influencers go, she's obviously got like amazing relationships and obviously 100%. Has an audience, because this isn't kind of like, because now with influencing, you can kind of tell who's newer to it and good at like the smoke and mirrors, but maybe isn't doing it that long. And you can tell who's almost from a different era. And I mean that in a good way. I think she has obviously weathered all these different kind of eras of the social media realm, and she's really good at it. She's got great style. Yeah. Like, her fashion on the show is quite sleek and chic and kind of specific, you know?
Yeah. And I also think what is sort of differentiating her time on this show versus her time on Ladies of London mm-hmm. over 10 years ago is like, back then she was newer to London. She was still trying to really like kind of prove herself. And
yes,
I think that
yes.
now she's lived there for over a decade. She's already gone through this ringer of like, she was a little bit like hazed on Ladies of London a little bit. Like she was
yeah.
treated in a different way, and she got through it. Now, and then she ended that show still being like best friends with Caroline Stanberry, the queen bee of that group. And I think that
yeah.
that whole experience, she really proved that she could stay, that she could, you know, stick up for herself, and she could hang with the Brits. And so she comes into Real Housewives of London way more emboldened. She feels really established, and she isn't going to be intimidated by these like really stalwart Brits. You know what I mean? And I think that that's, yeah. it's really cool to see that from her, and sort of how that's different from her first run on reality TV.
And also the Amanda Juliet feud is interesting, because I do think Amanda's been a bit out of pocket in how she's spoken to her, and Juliet gives as good as she gets in a way. But what's interesting is when they explain their side of it, you kind of go, oh, I get why you're mad here, and I get why you're mad here. And so the two storylines are running, like, it's the one storyline, but the two perspectives are running side by side.
Yes.
So you kind of can't quite choose a side. And that actually makes it very interesting, because sometimes you have these feuds in these shows where one person is either so dominant or so wrong that you go, well, this is one side, who cares? With this, I'm like, okay, like, it does seem like Juliet had your back. But then certain things, I could see why maybe Juliet did X, what, like, it's, I mean, there's an amazing, one of my favorite moments from the most recent episode, episode 6, when they're on the plane and Juliet has this kind of lighthearted but like shady back and forth with Amanda about her caviar dealer and being like, do you still have that friends and family discount? And Amanda kind of goes,
so good.
That was a good hookup. You was good. Yeah, that was good, actually.
She like, had to give that to like, her.
Begrudging me like, yeah, darling, it was pretty good, actually. I was like, that's the kind of stuff you want on camera, right? Those kind of like, oh, like kind of shadiness, and it's got history to it. And it makes you think that maybe they could find a way back. Although if the premiere was any indication, I don't know.
but that's why I think that things got so heated was because they did have fun together and they didn't really like each other.
Yeah.
And then they had this big falling out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the caviar dealer thing, that's on the plane. And then when they get in the car to go to the castle, Amanda's like, well, the dealer told me that Juliet only reaches out when she needs something and that he's not talking to her right now. And then Nessie in her confessional is like, why else are you reaching out to your caviar dealer unless you need something?
And then I think actually on the after show, Juliet said, and obviously, I've since spoken to him and said, you know, she was horrible to me. Like, you can't deal with her anymore. So I actually hope that there is, that's one for Catherine Ryan at the reunion. Get into the caviar dealer. Bring him out. Bring him out. At the end, they can all do a scoop of caviar.
Oh, my God. Last thing about London. Obviously, there's still more season to go, which is great. You know, we've seen some cameos from Caroline Sarandby. And we know she lives in Dubai. But to me.
Yeah.
If they could somehow convince that woman to move back to London, even just for filming in a Meredith Marks sense where you live in the city for a couple months.
Yeah.
Even just seeing her a couple scenes here in London, in the environment that she so naturally fits into, it's even different from her own Dubai already. I'm just sort of like, this is Caroline Sarandby from Ladies of London that I would love to see her every single week on this show. And I just think that she's so meant to be on TV and Dubai just never fully clicked for her.
Yeah, and I did laugh because I've enjoyed her pop-up so far. I love seeing her with Juliet Mayhew because obviously we've never seen them together.
Right.
But that scene, they were in a shoe shop and the way Caroline came in, I was like, hi, darling. I was like, she barely even sat down. Whereas then she did the scene with Juliet Angus. And obviously we know they have a 10 years plus friendship. And her energy was quite different. I thought this is almost funny in and of itself. Like, I don't doubt that you're friends with all these girlies, but it's probably different kinds of friendships.
Absolutely.
Although, I mean, listen, you're talking about trying to get Caroline to come over from Dubai. If they could convince Dorinda to do Radio Andy remotely from London, they've got radio studios. I know Dorinda can be a little bit dominating in these kind of cast settings. Like, obviously, it was part of her charm and also, I think, her downfall in New York. But, like, I would love to watch Panthea and Dorinda go back. Can you imagine?
I think if you put Dorinda in as a friend on London, just theoretically, she would be a little bit more measured, maybe, because it's totally, it's not a new environment for her, but in terms of being on TV, it's new. And I think that Americans coming to London, you act a little bit differently, and just there'd be something to prove a little bit for Dorinda, and so it'd be really interesting. I agree. All right, let's do a quick 10 minutes on The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City so far. So we're coming off of Lisa Barlow's luncheon to clear things up.
I'm laughing at the memory of the luncheon.
This luncheon had no lunch and no clearing things up.
Yeah, you're right. There was no food.
It obviously had major echoes back to Karen Huger's Real Housewives of Potomac press conference. Thoughts on that general idea, how it landed, how it all unfurled?
I'm just laughing. I don't know, like, usually on these shows, if someone leaves the show or isn't in an episode, 9 times out of 10, I'm like, you don't miss them. It's an ensemble. Uh-huh. When they started this season off, and I know they spoke about Lisa a lot, but not having her there, I just thought, I miss her. I need Lisa Barlow on the show. And when she has been back these two episodes, and particularly at this luncheon, I was like, I'm sorry, I don't always agree with her. She can be a little much, but there's no one like her in this franchise for me. She's just so funny. So, still somehow, even though she's aware of what people say online, she kind of doesn't have self-awareness. She is the exact same at all times. Like, I find it so fascinating. And even like Bronwyn has her number and is able to be like, nah, Lisa, like this, this, and this. And it just, that just makes her even funnier, because then Lisa can't handle that someone is questioning her. I love Karen Huger and all that, but I think this was like that Karen Huger press conference on steroids. It was just something else altogether.
It really was.
Incredible.
And I think that for some people, Lisa's hard to stomach in some ways, and she's all, and she, you know, even when she's wrong,
and she is
loud,
she
and
is.
Whatever. But like,
yeah,
I just think I got kind of like Panthea. We were talking about Lisa is made for this, and
yeah,
this is what Housewives is all about. Sometimes these big, campy, ridiculous moments, and like if you can appreciate something like Lisa Barlow's, you know, lawsuit dismissal luncheon, then I don't know what we're doing here. Could you call it a flop in terms of it not, you know, achieving the objective that she set out to have it achieve? Sure. But it was a moment and it got things popping in multiple directions. And I appreciate it for that.
And like it is, it's like also, I don't know if she'll like explain herself, but her, and I know it wasn't very nice. For some reason, her going redhead to Whitney was just so like, and was she trying to say your hair isn't that color naturally? I was like, but her just going redhead, or like, I mean, it's so foul, but gout dick sucker, like what goes through her brain?
Listen, Lisa,
what goes on in her head?
Lisa can sometimes go for the low blows or the low hanging fruit, but that's, yeah, again, that's one way to fight on Housewives. And I feel like her and Whitney are just like not really meant to be friends. They had that one season where they had a little bit of an alliance.
Yeah.
But that was never meant to last. Like they are kind of oil and water. They're very different people. I don't think that's meant to be a friendship.
I got the vibe at the luncheon as well that Amy, Utah socialite, who obviously filmed all the scenes that we're seeing slivers of, was kind of team Lisa, or trying to be. Like, yeah, when she stuck up for her, and Lisa's like, that's so true, Amy. Yeah, Amy. And I'm like, Amy, don't get used to this. You won't be around long. Like, that is making me laugh. Utah socialite.
And I love that they're calling her Utah socialite instead of Lisa's friend.
That's so funny.
Because she clearly doesn't even last the full season, probably. I'm guessing she drops out pretty soon. Because I bet you after this luncheon, she was like, I can't do this anymore. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like that's what's going to happen.
That's what it reads. Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about Bronwyn and how she is really holding it down. And she's so quick with Lisa. She is really... You know, we saw that she was smart and quick last season, but she's slightly recalibrated this season in a way that's really beneficial to her, I think. And like, she just does not flinch in these moments with Lisa. And like, I just think she's having a fantastic second season. There's no sophomore slump with Bronwyn right now. Like, I think that she's having a great season so far, three episodes in.
It's funny, too, because we're getting both this very like combative in a good way where she's wading in with the group. But then her personal story is obviously quite moving this year with all the stuff with her family and her dad in particular. And it's funny, I guess, because of the gap between seasons and because the reunion was so explosive, I had forgotten that a big thing for Bronwyn and Lisa last year was the thing about Lisa being friends with this family and that turning out to be like the father of Bronwyn's kid and this whole very complicated thing that like, yeah, it's interesting. Like, I do like Bronwyn. I think some of her like would-be shady moments in interviews don't always land. Like, she falls into that trap slightly, I think, sometimes of thinking she's like a lot smarter than the women and a lot smarter than the show. And in some ways, she probably is smarter than some of these women. But sometimes I'm like, like, you also lied about a necklace last year. Like, you're in the muck with the rest of them. Like, you're down in the dirt too. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. But I think her ability to stare down the conflict and wade in and have an opinion is to her credit. And you can just tell, I mean, it's obviously addressed on the show, but you can just tell Heather's a little shaken because she's like, no, I'm the funny point of view one. I'm the normal one. There can't be two of us. When I'm actually like, there can be two of you, but like, she fulfills a similar role to Heather, right? Like, she's slightly above the fray sometimes, but then I think she's actually better at getting in the mix and having it out, whereas sometimes I think Heather deflects or gets defensive if she has to kind of fight her corner a bit.
Those are two really good points. And the first one I think is really interesting because Lisa's getting a lot of flack for being like, my life's different from all of yours. I do big things. Which by the way, Andy asked when I watched What Happens Live. He was like, why did you print out like those photos of like you at the on the yacht and you in the back?
Yeah.
And she was like, it's because I do big things, Andy. Like that's But like, Lisa is presenting this really obvious sort of, she's not sort of trying to hide it. And she's being very loud about like, I'm different from all you.
Yes.
But like Bronwyn's way of doing that is a lot more subtle, but it's still there. And I think that Bronwyn can maybe still she would be wise to maybe recalibrate that sometime, because it can come across as know-it-all and a little bit condescending, I think.
But then in a strange way, that's also interesting to see, because it reminds you, like, she's sitting there thinking, oh my God, I'm so much smarter. And we're like, well, not really. That's why you're here. And I think actually, was it Mary who said, Mary gave an interview recently before the season started, saying something on the lines of like, you just have to be yourself and not worry what the audience thinks. And I think that's Bronwyn's, that could be her downfall. Because Mary truly is in a world of her own. And as much as, I mean, the stuff with Mary's son is so upsetting, and I don't want to say I admire her for talking about it because that sounds patronizing, but I do commend them for having the conversation on the show. Other than that, Mary is very much in her own world and truly is so unfazed by that. I feel like if they said to her, hey, we're filming tomorrow, meet the girls at Side Beauty Lab and Laser, and they were all there, but there was no cameras, she would be the exact same. Like, she is so truly on her own planet. And sometimes I'm like, Bronwyn, that's kind of what you would love to be like, just really removed from the fray, you know? So Mary has been fascinating as well.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, reflective of that is that you're kind of unsure where Mary's going to totally fall this season. Cause it's kind of like, you know, I think that her and Meredith and Lisa are friends. Her and Meredith are friends again. I'm not sure about her and Lisa and how close they are. Her and Angie have some sort of falling out, but I kind of get a sense that they are sort of rebuilding or in a better place again. And so I think Mary can fluctuate in terms of where she is with anybody in the group. Whereas like Bronwyn and Whitney and Angie are firmly on like a different side from everybody else. And so it's sort of like Mary is the floater. And I like that she's able to exist in that kind of murky middle ground, because that's authentically, I think, where she is.
And also she just will come out with some gems, like when they are looking at all the images and she keeps saying, why is it all blurred out? Because obviously parts of it have been redacted or something.
Uh-huh.
And just, or like convinced that she can resuscitate a fish when they're on a camping trip. I just, there's something, she is on another planet at all times. It's actually why sometimes, obviously, the stuff with Robert is very moving. When mm-hmm. she locks in and has a real conversation, you kind of go, oh my God, like there is a lovely person here. You just are so alien like the rest of the time.
Mm-hmm. What's your read on Angie so far this season? Because, you know, her and Mary are still good. Her and Lisa kind of ended the reunion seemingly in a good place, but Angie kind of didn't really waste any time by kind of hopping on sort of the lawsuit talk. Where are you with Angie and how she's like kind of carrying herself in the group?
She's a funny one, because I like the arc of her being a kind of a side character and then now being such a big part of the main cast.
It's
is
a good
cool.
arc. Yeah.
But sometimes I think she tries a little bit too hard to be like, have a hot take and everything and wade into the drama. And like, she can be a bit kind of over the top in a way that I don't always think is genuine. But like, now that we have Brittany, she makes Angie look like a no makeup wearing like girl next door. Like, so I'm kind of like, Angie actually is very normal compared to some of them. But like, I do like Angie. I just sometimes I'm like, it's a little bit put on. And when she kind of lets her guard down, like I really liked her with her dad this week. Because I'm like, this side of you is actually so interesting.
I love her dad so much.
Yeah. Like that stuff is really interesting. Like, we'll see. I mean, I think she had a big season last year, so I'm curious where she'll fall this year. But then you mentioned Meredith. Meredith feels really removed from the fray. Maybe because she was filming Next Gen NYC. I don't know. She was busy filming a whole other show. But like, we'll see. I mean, I'm curious where Angie and Lisa go, because I think they were close at one point, and now when they really were, like their closeness before was genuine. So now they're kind of butting up heads is interesting.
I know.
And also, as you said, what goes on with her and Mary?
I know. I was kind of hoping that Lisa and Angie would at least have like a little period at the beginning of the season where they could like kind of recultivate that friendship before having another falling out, probably inevitably. But like, I think because Lisa wasn't there for that first cast trip, like there was no on-ramp into the lawsuit. It was just like, Lisa's not here. We're talking about it. Instead of it sort of percolating in the group at first while Angie and Lisa kind of became friends again.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little bit unfortunate, because it feels like we're kind of being thrown into it. And I'm not complaining about that. But I think there are a couple sort of like dynamics within the group that could have benefited from a little bit of like a slower start maybe to the season to like have it simmer up, you know?
Yeah, Salt Lake City is very entertaining and very funny, but at times it's a little bit heightened and they're very aware they're on a show that sometimes it gets too cartoony. And I'm like, oh, like walk it back a little bit, guys. Like the Blair Witch thing is funny for like a second, but I'm like, why am I watching them all run around with like digital cameras? Like it's kind of a gimmick. You know, like let this story unfold naturally. And already by episode 3, I'm like, as much as Lisa's Munchin is a campy set set piece, the motive behind it is much more true to her, and their reaction to it is much more real. You know, like even them just going, why are there photos of you on a yacht? Like, that's funny.
Right, right.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's crazy that we're only 3 episodes into this season. And there's so much to sort of...
I know. But, yeah.
So in that way, and I think that like they can get away with the gimmicks and the campiness way more than any other franchise at this point. Like it because I think of Salt Lake City as like a meta housewife show in a lot of ways. Like it's very, it is so like kind of overtly about being housewives and being on TV and this group being put together sort of because of that. I think they can get away with a lot more of that than, you know, maybe OC could, you know.
You could only make Salt Lake City now, I think, just in terms of where social media is and like how people play themselves online and how far along this format is. Like there's a, like it is funny. I think there's a method to their madness of when they launch these shows and the timing, either the interest in the place is set in or the kind of people they find, because you couldn't have done this even 10 years ago. It would, like, I don't think the wheels would all have been in place. So it is very much of the moment. I think it's why so many newcomers, apart from the fact that there's fewer seasons, right, it's a bit less daunting, but I think newcomers like this show because it is so grabby and attention, and it's so of the now, and it's so like, you said this on TikTok, everyone's like, well, that's what I would do, you know.
Oh man, any other thoughts on Salt Lake City, Connor, before we wrap up here?
I'm curious where Heather will go.
Yeah,
I find, like, I think I get the vibe she's a little adrift in the group. She's threatened by Bronwyn. Meredith, I still find entertaining, but there is not a lot going on there. Or she's pulled back, or she filmed and they haven't used it yet. Who knows? So that I'm curious about. How much more of Utah socialite we'll see, that feels up in the air. As you say, it could be her goodbye already, but that I'm morbidly curious about.
Yeah, I feel like with Heather, I think they're very much like breadcrumbing us that her and Bronwyn are going to become at least friendly, and Bronwyn's on a Watch What Happens Live, like, you know, I want to stay in Heather's good graces because that's where I am. So like, they're pushing Heather from Lisa and towards Angie and Bronwyn and Whitney. And because I think that Whitney and Heather's them as a duo is sort of unbreakable, I think, at this point. Similarly, probably to how Lisa and Meredith are, you know? And so I think she's changing sides this season.
Whitney is actually, it's funny you mentioned Whitney. I have to say, her being so blunt with the business stuff is kind of commendable, and it's refreshing. And I think it's such a small thing, but in the first episode when Brittany was like, you're being dragged on social media, I was like, this is a sign that you all spend too much time online, because I've never actually heard half of you women say dragged or shade or these like very online terms that like we all have a parlance.
Brittany's very online.
I was like, okay, someone's in the DMs a little bit too much for reading all the messages. But Whitney, I'm kind of, also I know she's not a redhead anymore, but it really suits her being,
I think she looks good.
Goddess.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think I agree that the being very open about her business failing is commendable and rare to see on Housewives. And so it's an interesting thing to think we'll see this season. And I also think her sort of getting ahead of it in a lot of ways, like kind of meeting, kind of not letting Brittany go down that road, it kind of cuts off a lot of the question that she might have otherwise have gotten if she had been more cagey about it or like a little bit less forthcoming, because there are legitimate questions that you could ask about sort of the nature of the business and sort of what road they were going down. But I think because she is being so forthcoming about it not working, it's sort of cutting that off.
Yeah, I mean, it's smart. And I don't know, I'm sure you saw this over the last like few months or so, but she did this like cruise tour of Australia with Teresa Giudice and a couple of queens in Drag Race. And in my mind, we need like Laganja Estranja. We need to have a scene on the show, because Laganja is like, that's my girl, we're friends for life. I'm like, put Laganja in, fly her out to Utah. I don't care. She can do a drag performance. I don't care. Let's have these worlds collide again on my screen. I need that to happen. That could be the reunion.
I mean, and Whitney's one of those people, one of those housewives who you just know is fun to be with in person and like to be at a party with. Like she'd be so fun to hang out with in that realm. Well, Colin, this has been so great. I really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Jumping on. And again, I was really craving Real Houses of London chat. So I'm
gotta
happy to have broken it down with a true expert who has met all the people.
Thank you. I know. What the hell? How did that happen? That's the first time that's ever happened.
I love that. Where and when can people listen to what you're putting out there? I know you write some stuff. You're a DJ. You have your podcast that you used to do. Do some plugs before we sign off here.
Sure. So if you want to find me on social media, Instagram is the main one I use. It's Connor B. And so Like, it's CONORBEHAN. I'm on Twitter, but I don't really use it anymore. I just lurk, which I probably shouldn't do. The podcast, Housewives and Me, we did it for about 3 years, kind of in lockdown into 2022. So there is like a whole archive of chats with people like yourself, Elizabeth Day. I mean, if you like your pop music from 2000, Samantha Mumba did an episode. The girls did the, yeah, Samantha like watches all the shows. She's met actually a lot of them. She, and actually way after she did the podcast, she hung out with Dorinda and Karen Huger. And I was DMing her being like, tell me everything. She was like, I don't know where to start. I should bring the show back just to do a follow-up with Samantha, honestly. So that's out there if you want it. I mean, it's very of its time because I'm thinking now there's like whole shows have been launched in the time since we took the show off air. But it's there wherever you get your podcasts. And look, I post my stories about these shows at random intervals during the week. And I've accepted that the people who get it, get it. And if you don't, you don't. Because I don't watch all the reality stuff people here watch. I'm like, I'm a Hey You head. I've got my American Girlies. I've got my Bravo fix every week. So come join me on Instagram and we'll have a gossip.
I love it. I love it. Connor, you're the best. It was great to chat with you again.
Thank you.
We'll do this again soon.
Back to Paddington.
Back to Paddington. You go.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at GibSonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gabe at Gabbing with Gabe on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gabe is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.
This Valentine's Day, the UPS Store Certified Packing Experts are helping pack and ship all the ways we care. From the lovey-dovey XOXO gifts for your Galentine's gal pal, even pet gifts for doggy dearest. When you ship UPS Air at the UPS Store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Send your Valentine's on time at the UPS Store. Visit theupsstore.com/airguarantee for full details. Terms and conditions apply.